Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. The Clinical Oncology Society of Australia has just released a position statement on exercise as a vital part of cancer care. A summary of the statement is published by the MJA and can be found at www.mja.com.au. Associate Professor Prue Cormey is an exercise physiologist and Principal Research Fellow at the Mary MacKillop Institute for Health Research at the ACU. She is a co-author of the COSA statement, and she is my special guest on the pod today. Why did COSA feel it needed to put out a position statement on this? Was there a gap in knowledge? Was there new evidence that had come up to suggest a change in practice?
The Clinical Oncology Society of Australia really represents kind of the peak body for all multidisciplinary health professionals involved in the clinical care of cancer. And one of the roles is to obviously then advocate for best practice care for people with cancer. So COSA put this statement together and went through the robust procedure in putting together a position statement, really because the level of evidence now available mandates that every person diagnosed with cancer should be prescribed exercise medicine in addition to their surgery, chemotherapy and radiation treatment. And that really comes out of the research evidence. So based on what the science tells us, exercise is the best medicine people with cancer can take in addition to their cancer treatment to reverse treatment-related side effects, to increase quality of life, and to extend survival. So people who, or cancer patients who take their exercise medicine or perform high quality exercise regularly actually experience fewer and less severe treatment-related side effects. They have a lower relative risk of their cancer coming back or cancer recurrence, and they have a lower relative risk of dying from their cancer, and particularly with the evidence we have in there relating to breast, prostate, and colon cancers. There's an extensive body of clinical research and epidemiological studies that has established exercise as an effective medicine for people with cancer. So it may help patients live longer and slow the progression of cancer. And these are meaningful risk reductions. To give you an example, a range of between 20 to 45% reduction in the relative risk of cancer mortality for some cancers, and between a 20 to 35% relative risk reduction in cancer recurrence, and that's particularly for breast cancer patients. In addition to that, exercise helps patients tolerate aggressive treatment. It helps minimise the physical declines caused by cancer, helps counteract cancer-related fatigue that affects almost all people with cancer, helps manage mental distress and the psychological side effects of cancer and its treatment, and it improves quality of life and overall well-being. So it's really undoubtable that if the effects of exercise could be encapsulated in a pill, it would be prescribed to every cancer patient worldwide. And even if that pill had just a fraction of the positive health benefits that high-quality exercise provides, it would be viewed as a breakthrough in cancer treatment. If we could turn the benefits of exercise into a pill, and if we had a drug called exercise, it would be demanded by patients. It would be prescribed by every single cancer specialist, and it would be subsidised through by government. It could even be argued that doctors who didn't prescribe such a pill certainly wouldn't be providing adequate care to their patients and may even be viewed as negligent. So it's really a strong level of evidence that we now have that mandates exercise should be prescribed as a routine part of cancer care.
Why do you think doctors have not been doing this, have not been prescribing exercise as part of cancer treatment?
Look, some doctors do advise their patients to engage in exercise, both during and after cancer treatment. But what we can see from the research data is that the majority of oncology health professionals do not discuss exercise with their patients. So despite the majority of clinicians agreeing that exercise is beneficial, exercise is not yet viewed as an adjunct therapy that helps counteract the adverse effects of cancer and its treatment. And that's really reflected in the rates of cancer patients who are engaging in regular exercise. So about 70 to 90% of people with cancer don't exercise enough And approximately one in three cancer patients don't perform any exercise at all. And the research also shows that participation in exercise decreases after a diagnosis of cancer, and the return to pre-cancer exercise levels, you know, is unlikely. So there's, you know, it's the prescription of exercise in cancer care is not happening as part of standard practice at this stage, and that's despite the level of evidence. There's a combination of factors that are barriers to cancer care health professionals prescribing exercise. Some of these factors include time constraints, especially given the number of patients that people with that doctors are seeing at the moment, as well as the volumes of topics that they need to discuss, and that's especially true in complex cases. There can be some other issues as well, maybe, you know, lack of awareness of the actual level of scientific evidence underpinning the role of exercise in cancer care. It can be the concern over the physical capacity of their patients to exercise, or concern over the financial cost associated with exercise, although the costs are probably less than what a patient spends on parking at the hospital throughout their treatment.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's also the potential assumption that their patients won't change their exercise behaviours. There's a number of things that we can talk about in trying to counteract those barriers, but I think, you know, there's the assumption that doctors can't change exercise behaviour, and that potentially prescribing it wouldn't make much of a difference to their patients.
Right.
But that's not what we're seeing through the research evidence. We're seeing that approximately 80% of patients with cancer acknowledge that a doctor's prescription and referral to an exercise program is a big contributor in terms of when, if they actually engage in exercise. Every minute of the day, doctors throughout Australia are convincing their patients to do really quite incredible things, you know, to undergo treatments that have significant adverse effects on their lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, if doctors can convince patients to undergo months of chemotherapy or major surgery, you know, why shouldn't they be able to convince them to exercise? There's a lot of things that could contribute to that. So, you know, obviously having position statements such as the COSA position statement that provides doctors with a clear understanding of what the level of evidence are, and also the clout and support of this position statement, you know, over 25 influential health organisations having a united voice around the role of exercise in cancer care, that really contributes to the education and training of doctors in terms of what role exercise has to play.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, you know, the ability to enhance our education and training in terms of effective exercise counselling, supplemented by enhanced behavioural change techniques that are implemented by exercise specialists. You know, surely that will have an impact. You know, we've got a range of different strategies to target the patient directly now and tap into really rapid advances made in technologies for mobile health and activity monitoring, as well as approaches which would provide infrastructure and resources to support exercise within hospitals and within the community and within our local areas as well. Now, when we think about the funding and the resources dedicated to changing smoking or sun exposure behaviours and the impact those strategies have had, like, these provide a really good precedent for successfully changing unhealthy behaviours. And there's, you know, no reason really why we can't take that 70 to 90% of people who aren't exercising and change it into 70 to 90% of people who are exercising regularly and are realising the benefits, the therapeutic benefits of high-quality exercise medicine.
How do we overcome that when people just don't want to get out of bed in the morning, let alone do some exercise? How do we encourage them to overcome that?
It's a really important point, because some people are experiencing really high levels of symptoms and side effects from their treatment,
yeah,
that make it very difficult to engage in exercise. Very, you know, when you talk to patients, it's kind of counterintuitive, and the fact that they're experiencing these significant levels of fatigue and physical side effects,
yeah,
and we're asking them to exercise, it doesn't make sense. The level of evidence that we have is very strong around the role of exercise to manage cancer-related fatigue, and it's been established that exercise is the best therapeutic approach to manage cancer-related fatigue, better than any kind of pharmaceutical intervention. The ability to deliver exercise to these patients in a way that's tailored and targeted to them is absolutely key in being able to generate these benefits, and that's a core component of what the position statement is talking about, making sure that we're not just advising patients to adhere with the exercise recommendations, but we're also talking about best practice care. And best practice care includes referral to an accredited exercise physiologist or a physiotherapist with experience in cancer care.
Yeah.
And what they can do is they can tailor the exercise recommendations to the individual's ability, noting that specific exercise programming adaptations may be required for people with cancer based on the disease itself, what kind of treatment-related side effects they're experiencing, what's their current health status, and what is the anticipated trajectory of their disease as well.
All points to getting the experts, i.e. the exercise physiologists and the physiotherapists involved as early as you can post-treatment, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. These health professionals are specifically trained to deliver exercise.
Yeah.
So an exercise physiologist, a physiotherapist specialise in the delivery of exercise to patients with chronic disease or those requiring acute rehabilitation following injury or surgery or so on. So these specialists are tertiary qualified allied health professionals who undergo at least 4 to 5 years of university training and also continuing professional development training. The way I can work with a patient who's experiencing fatigue is really the way that I work as an exercise physiologist. I use exercise as a medicine to help manage disease and improve the health and well-being of patients. And to realise the therapeutic effects of exercise, we use very targeted exercise prescriptions based on the physiological changes required to improve health. So we know as an exercise physiologist or physiotherapist, we know and we study how exercise impacts the structure and function of the body systems. And exercise impacts all of the systems simultaneously. And really, there's no other medication or treatment that can positively influence as many organ systems as exercise can. Now, by having an understanding of what happens to our physiology when we exercise, it allows us to prescribe exercise in a similar way that doctors prescribe medications and therapies. And these prescriptions involve specific types of exercise performed at precise intensities and volumes.
Yep.
Based on a mechanism of action and a dosage needed to elicit a targeted adaptation.
Is Medicare helping to provide best care to these patients?
So cancer patients are eligible for up to 5 subsidised visits with an exercise physiologist or a physiotherapist under the Chronic Disease Management Plan. But going through their general practitioner to have a plan developed where they can be referred to an exercise physiologist or physiotherapist. Now, in addition to this, there's now over 30 private health insurers that will provide subsidies for exercise services with accredited exercise physiologists or physiotherapists. Cool. And that can be the combination of individual consultations and individual exercise sessions as well as some group-based sessions as well. So there are subsidies that do exist for the financial element of seeing these specialists. And it also, I think we need to also reframe the cost associated with going and seeing an exercise specialist is really an investment that's associated with good side effects or good benefit. We know that exercise is a potent preventative for many chronic diseases, as well as a therapy to help manage chronic diseases. So it can help people manage their comorbid diseases. It can improve their overall well-being. We know it's a stimulus for other health-enhancing behaviours such as eating better, drinking less alcohol, and quitting smoking. And we also know from a health system perspective that exercise represents a highly cost-effective in health service intervention. When we're talking about the cost of cancer and of the side effects of cancer to the health system and society as a whole.
So if I'm a GP and one of my patients who's just completed their chemo or radiation, walk into my surgery, what should my management plan and my immediate plan be for improving their immediate health?
Within the position statement, the Clinical Oncology Society of Australia calls for exercise to be embedded as a part of standard practice in cancer care and to be viewed as an adjunct therapy that helps counteract the adverse effects of cancer and its treatments. It also calls for all members of the multidisciplinary cancer team to promote exercise and recommend people adhere with exercise guidelines. Now, those guidelines stipulate that all people with cancer should avoid inactivity and return to normal daily activities as soon as possible following a diagnosis, which means advising your patients to be as physically active as current abilities and conditions allow. Now, in addition to this, all people with cancer should be advised to progress towards and, once achieved, maintain participation in at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic exercise each week.
Yep.
So that's equivalent to a 30-minute brisk walk on 5 days a week. And a really important component that is so often left out is 2 to 3 resistance exercise sessions each week, which is lifting weights involving a moderate to vigorous intensity and using exercise that target the major muscle groups of the body. A core component in the benefits, the therapeutic benefits that we're seeing resulting from exercise within the research literature, and that does get left out of the recommendations that patients receive a lot of the time. Now, if I'm a cancer patient and I've just gone through surgery or I'm going through chemotherapy, yep. those guidelines seem very far out of reach for
yes.
me. So this is why the Clinical Oncology Society of Australia calls for best practice care to include referral to an accredited exercise physiologist or yep. a physiotherapist who has experience in cancer care. And those exercise specialists can tailor those exercise recommendations so it's specifically targeted to me and my health conditions and work, allowing me to work within the constraints of the side effects that I'm experiencing, my level of functional capacity, so I can work towards these exercise guidelines mm-hmm. while still maintaining a therapeutic benefit of the exercise that I'm doing now. There's a couple of key things I think. Cancer impacts almost every Australian.
Yes.
So 1 in 2 Australians will be diagnosed with cancer.
Wow.
And that's an equivalent of about somebody in Australia is diagnosed with cancer every 4 minutes. And every 11 minutes, someone in Australia dies from cancer. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
In addition to this, cancer is Australia's biggest killer, so it yeah. causes 30% of all deaths. And it also causes the most disease burden in Australia, so it's about 19% of all diseases. So cancer can have not only a significant impact on our health system and our society as a whole, but it can have a devastating impact on people's lives. Can cause serious health issues that compromise physical and mental well-being. It can rob people of their quality of life. Exercise offers a way to counteract that. And exercise really is the best medicine that somebody with cancer can take outside of their standard cancer treatments
yeah.
to try and counteract these effects. This position statement, the COSA position statement, is really calling on all health professionals involved in the care of people with cancer to discuss the role of exercise in cancer recovery, to recommend their patients adhere to exercise guidelines, and to refer their patients to a health professional who specialises in the prescription and the delivery of exercise. And that's an accredited exercise physiologist or a physiotherapist with experience in cancer care. This position statement isn't just from the Clinical Oncology Society of Australia. It represents a united voice from over 25 influential health organisations about the importance of exercise as a specific therapy that should be incorporated as a standard component of cancer care. And these endorsements are coming from large bodies, such as the Royal Australasian College of Physicians, the Medical Oncology Group of Australia, the peak professional bodies for exercise specialists, Exercise and Sports Science Australia, Australian Physiotherapy Association, a number of different clinical trial groups, as well as patient groups, Cancer Council Australia, Breast Cancer Network Australia, Prostate Cancer Foundation Australia, and so on and so on. Really emphasising the point that exercise should be incorporated as a standard component of routine cancer care.
What are the physiological processes going on that make yeah. exercise so good?
We don't have a clear understanding of exactly what the mechanisms are driving the protective effect of exercise against cancer progression and cancer death. These data come out of observational studies, so they're epidemiological studies.
Yep.
So there is the potential that that there is reverse causality associated with these observations, meaning that the patients who exercise more have a better prognosis, and that may mean that they survive longer. So that is a possibility because of the research design. But in saying that, these publications are in journals that are the highest ranking in the medical field, mm-hmm. and they look at a whole range of confounding factors in the statistical analyses. In addition to this, we've seen to a number of different animal studies and acute human studies and some basic research showing that there's a range of mechanisms that are theorised to be associated with the physiological adaptations that modulate tumour progression. And this may be a combination of these factors may actually help slow the progression of cancer. One of the ways that exercise could do this is actually increasing the efficacy of the treatments or the chemotherapy. Cancer tumours change the blood vessels around them, which can restrict the amount of chemotherapy actually reaching the cells.
Yes.
So early research suggests that exercise may help blood perfusion or tumour vascularisation by building more blood vessels to the tumour. And I suppose by then getting around these roadblocks with new blood vessels, mm-hmm. more drugs and more of the body's own natural defence mechanism can attack the cancer cells. Another thing that exercise can do is actually enhance the body's overall immune system. So it's possible then that the cancer cells can be flooded with either a bigger wave of the body's own natural cancer-killing agents. Exercise can also have an anti-inflammatory effect and help regulate oxidative stress. In addition to this, it's proposed that exercise acts to control some of the hormones that stimulate the spread of cancer. There may also be some epigenetic changes,
yeah.
and may be that exercise can help turn on the genes that stop the spread of cancer. So the more you exercise, the more your genes tell your body to kill the cancer cells. So there are a range of different mechanisms that we've seen through preclinical data and acute data that actually gives us this indication of something's going on.
Excellent.
And when we actually look at the preclinical data, the animal data, we see that you are injected with tumours and divided into two groups, one that exercises and one that doesn't.
Yeah.
The group that exercises has a smaller volume of tumours, and those tumours are less spread throughout the body. So these data give us an indication of that there's something going on physiologically
yes.
that may modulate tumour progression. One of the other factors that we believe may be associated with this protective effect of exercise is the ability of people who are exercising to tolerate greater dosages of adjuvant treatment. So it may be that exercise allows people to stay on cancer treatments for longer, and mm-hmm. it's those cancer treatments themselves that are actually having a significant impact on slowing disease progression.
Thank you
so much, Kate.
Well, thank you for your time, Prue. It's been good.
A pleasure.
Thanks. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.